I'm Jason Klom, and this is the Comedy on Vinyl podcast. The year is 1969, we think. The album is Hello, Seal, It's Me. The artist is Betty Walker. My guest is Jackie Cation.
Hello, I enjoy the small we think.
Yeah.
Because Cliff Nesterhoff, who wrote a book that I haven't read about the history of comedy.
Uh-huh.
Did you read it?
No.
Yeah, there you go.
I need to get it.
It's the way to go. It's the way to go, I say, because we hear about it and it'll be fine.
Absolutely.
We're living in the moment.
He doesn't need my help. Mel Brooks loved it. Like, he got all the praise of the good people.
Right, yeah.
So it's probably a very good book.
The thing is people, whenever anybody writes a book that's supposedly like the history of comedy,
mm-hmm.
you're like, how about the history of some comedy?
Right.
And
yeah, that's inevitable. Yeah.
And it's inevitable. And it's there's no way to make it be everything to everybody.
Exactly.
So I wanted it to have more than one line about Carol Burnett.
Mm-hmm.
But that's me,
right.
You know?
Right.
So who knows? And so I picked an album off of your list.
Yes.
Because I am Jackie Cation and I never listened to stand-up comedy.
Never
did as a child. That's been established. The only album I ever bought, we did it last time.
Yes.
Lenny Bruce.
Yeah. That was a fun album to talk about, too.
Yeah, because it was his best album we went with, in my opinion, because I bought a bunch of other ones and threw them away.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Just kept the one.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I got rid of my record player, I got rid of that album as well.
Yeah,
for the love of God, I'm not a hoarder by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, me neither.
Wait a minute. We are surrounded by items.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Many items.
I have no idea.
So
and this is one of them. This is one of those that I just told you I bought in Kalamazoo, Michigan, because I was there for a wedding, and of course I went to a record shop.
Of course you did. Hello, Seal. It's me, mm-hmm. Betty Walker. Now, Cliff Nesterhoff said that this came out in 69.
Yes.
It is essentially her on the phone. We're just listening to her talk to supposedly her friend Seal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the whole bit.
Yep.
That's the shtick.
Yep. For 45 minutes.
For 45 minutes. Now, who does that sound like?
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Bob Newhart.
Of course, sure.
I thought I was going to be able to Hannibal Buress Bob Newhart and huge reveal that he stole his act from Betty Walker. But nope, that is not happening. And because this came out in 69 and his came out in 61.
Mm-hmm.
This is a premise that I don't approve of.
You don't approve?
Okay. I do not approve
of
half of a phone call being your shtick. you can, it's not for me.
Right.
This was pretty funny.
Sure.
It was a pretty funny album.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Newhart, very funny guy.
Yeah.
Just tell the joke, man. I don't mean to get all Lenny Bruce in your head, in your face, but
mm-hmm.
Mort Saul,
mm-hmm.
he brought the newspaper up.
Sure.
Guess what? Mm. Why don't you read the newspaper, write some jokes about it, leave the newspaper back at your table.
So your thought is Betty's literally phoning it in.
Oh my gosh. Betty and Bob both phoning it in.
Mm-hmm.
But, and this thing, like literally, or I've never used that word correctly. Hi guys. Are you listening? So this is actually a very funny album, but it's, mm-hmm. it's kind of, it's shticky and it very much, some of it doesn't, you know what? I was going to say it doesn't hold up, but it actually does for exactly what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's good for exactly what it is.
Yeah, but being like one note is kind of difficult for you. Is that the thing?
Yeah, it's 40 minutes of one note.
Mm-hmm.
And this woman, Betty Walker, if she is portraying herself, you're like, you're a mess, lady.
Yeah.
But I did watch Rod Serling had a game show.
You sent this to me. I had no idea 69, that existed. Uh-huh.
And then he redid it somebody else redid it as the host in 74.
Okay.
And she worked on both of them. And it looked like a golden opportunity to probably make 250 cash.
Right, yeah.
Hardcore. Sort of like the At Midnight of
mm-hmm.
our current administration, you know?
Yeah.
It's a great way to make a grand.
Mm-hmm.
And the youth are watching it.
Yep.
So maybe it'll drive some people to a show.
Sure.
And she's a comic, so But I think she mostly, like, I think it was sort of like Charles Nelson Reilly in the end, where she mm-hmm. was just doing that and then maybe some stand-up, but not, like, mm-hmm. she wasn't really acting. She only acted, I think, in the 50s.
Yeah, a little bit in the 60s. Interesting. See, that's interesting to me. And this is, yeah, clearly, honestly, if we'd have looked at the cover, I guess we probably could have guessed 69 pretty easily.
It looks pretty groovy. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe, yeah, maybe.
She's got a paisley shirt on.
God, I want it to be 59.
Yeah, I understand. Believe me.
Because I just, it's not that I don't like Bob Newhart, sure. but
no, I get
how
it.
Great would it be if we had a huge reveal?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, I this mean... came out 2 years before. Nope, nope,
well,
it did not.
Shelley Berman's convinced that Bob Newhart stole it, or was convinced at one point that he stole his act. But then again, what's his name? George Jessel was doing that act in the 20s and 30s. So, but right. who's to say there wasn't a woman doing it? It would be interesting to know if there are other women who did the phone bit.
How great would it be if someone was doing a telegraph thing in the 1860s? Seal. Hello, Seal. Yeah. No, I'm just calling to tell you that, can I borrow some money anyway? And no, is it okay? And so, and some of the tropes are just, you know, she's essentially a housewife,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And that's, she's portraying a housewife whose husband controls all the money,
mm-hmm.
and she is hiding debt. Mm-hmm. She's hiding shitty life choices.
Yep.
She doesn't have any money.
Yeah.
And so Mr. Tupperman, whose first name I've forgotten.
Yeah, me too.
And maybe Howard. But whatever, her husband... who I think at one point she refers to as Mr. Tupperman.
Yes, she does.
Feels romantic.
Mm-hmm.
And but he's all the things that it's sort of a, I mean, it's a little hacky, but it's only hacky because it's been done.
Sure.
It's yeah. been done so much since then.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't, they were some of the lines were actually quite funny.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish I would have taken notes.
Yeah, no, I wish I'd done the same thing, but I had the same exact feeling. Although it feels like 1969 feels like the last time you could have done it, and I don't know why she would still be, you know, like even the Brady Bunch was like, was out of step with what middle America was, and this just seems so
sort of
already dated.
Women's lib?
Yeah, it feels
except
very dated.
Remember, women couldn't have their own credit cards until 74. And so, I mean, there was like, and I read this book. I read this amazing, weird book about romance novels because
mm-hmm.
I inadvertently admitted during I think my last album, Horcrux, mm-hmm. that I read romance novels.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, you're never alone, you guys.
Mm-hmm.
So people are constantly handing me, and which, by the way, you can't buy other people's porn.
Right.
So stop handing me romance novels.
Yeah, that's weird. Yeah.
I've even gotten Maria Bamford to stop buying them because she'll go to like a Walgreens or something, and she's like, "What about this one? Look at his chest." And you're like, "Stop buying them for me." And but I did get this nonfiction book mm-hmm. called Dangerous Books for Girls.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it was about the history of romance novels. And it was...
That's interesting.
Lightly researched.
Okay.
It felt a little bit like a romance novel.
All
in the
right.
fact that it was a lightly historical romance.
Oh, no.
The history, pretty light.
Yeah.
By Maya Rodell, whatever her name is. Anyway, mm-hmm. but one of the things she pointed out was that the reason romance novels were sold in grocery stores
mm-hmm.
is because women could buy them using the grocery budget.
Interesting.
And so their fellas, their husbands didn't know. They were like, oh, there's an extra $2-3 on the mm-hmm. grocery list. Well, it's a romance novel.
That's
and
fascinating.
Yeah, it was kind of fascinating.
Holy shit. Just a subterfuge to go through just to feel human.
To get a book written by a woman for women about women. And even if it's some weird rape fantasy where you're like, any fantasy that makes me not make meatloaf on a Wednesday night. You know? And because I remember when I first started reading them, some of them were really old at the library.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just one horrible, you know, Luke and Laura from General Hospital where he rapes her and she falls in love with them. And then you're
right.
like, that seems wildly unlikely.
Yep. Yep.
And but you do whatever you got to do, lady. You need to get laid. You need to check out. Okay. It's been you and your God.
Oh, my God. The fact that that art existed, I think the assumption is that we're on a weird track right now, but like the assumption is always that these power fantasies are more for men, but the fact that they were made for women and that it
And they sold like hotcakes?
Right.
Yeah?
It's so funny. But you again, if you have no other choices, what are you going to...
Right, right. It was sort of the definition of those power fantasies were the power fantasies.
Mm-hmm.
And so women are like, all right, well, that's the fantasy.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe in the end, he falls for her anyway.
Right,
it's
right.
Not that he wants to just beat her up and rape her. Mm-hmm. He wants to beat her up and rape her. But then get this, he also wants to shower her with diamonds and take her out to dinner. Weird, you guys. Totally weird. I know. Makes you want to weep. But, so this lady in 69.
Yeah.
I think, and plus she was, remember, I think she was probably 35 years old in 1974.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So she wasn't like a 16-year-old in 1969.
Sure, sure.
Bringing it.
Right.
But I will say, but it's okay. So Perfect Couple.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that one?
If you remind me what it is, I'm sure I will.
I can't remind you. Warren's Flu, I remember.
They really, really run in together. The one I remember specifically is the bank and the horse. Those are the two I remember.
Oh, the horse.
Yeah.
The horse was actually really funny.
Yeah, I thought so,
because
yeah.
It was the call from the bank.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the horse thing was at the end of the bank thing, because she wanted to borrow the money,
mm-hmm,
because she
mm-hmm.
lost the money. It was, well, we bought a horse. And you're like, well, the Canasta group went and looked at the
right.
horse.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, you know, and what's the horse's name?
So I was the only one with the checkbook. That's the check I issued in Pennsylvania. The name of the horse? Listen, Sale, let me come over and make out the check for $400, just in case I forgot to add in a few other, huh? The name of the horse? Why is the name of the horse important to you, Sale? Listen, let me, huh? If I tell you the name of the horse, swear you're still gonna give me the money. The name of the horse? The name of the horse is Seal's Mouth. I told you you would get mad. No, it's not my fault. Tony Rosen said we should name it that. She said, girls, if this horse could ever run as fast as Seal talks, we got a winner. So, hello, Seal. Seal.
Seal's Mouth, which runs like Seal's Mouth, right? So it's a fast running horse. That's what, and then Seal hangs up on her.
Right.
Spoiler alert, you guys.
Uh-oh.
From this album 37 years ago.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what tracks do you remember that I'm completely forgetting? You said you remembered another
more
one.
More
on
like
there.
47 miles, by the way. So,
like the ones that
Guess Who's Getting Married.
Uh-huh.
Warren's Flu was one I did not like.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was just about how he had the flu.
Yeah.
And how... She didn't like him.
Right.
And it was irritating.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
If I remember correctly, 4 o'clock in the morning was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. They were, there was social commentary in it,
mm-hmm.
obviously,
mm-hmm.
but it was very much, the things that stuck with me is that she didn't have her own money,
mm-hmm.
and she had to hide this money business,
mm-hmm.
and she wasn't very good at it. And then there was another one. It's not helpful. This is not helpful at all. I wish I had listened to it, but unfortunately I listened to it a couple of days ago.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, yeah. But I mean, that's enough that it stood out to me. I mean, do you think it's better that there seems to be a clearly, it's not a romantic relationship left at all between her and her husband. Is it funnier that that's like super true, or would it have been more of a better album to you if there was a little hint of like sweet old American love between them?
Would have been awesome if this album had turned into how much she, and I've talked about this a couple of times on different podcasts about mm-hmm. how it's so much work to write negative comedy,
mm-hmm.
and it can be done very well,
sure,
obviously,
sure.
right? There's some seriously grumpy comics who are super broken mm-hmm. that write some hilarious comedy.
Sure.
But for me, I like the idea of being happy mm-hmm. and doing the work to write jokes about that happiness.
Mm-hmm.
That's work too.
Yeah.
But then get this. If you're negative, you live this horrible negative life. Mm-hmm. You write these great jokes about your horrible negative life. Mm-hmm. And then you relive it every time yeah. you tell that damn joke. I would rather be happy, do the hard work of writing jokes about being happy, and then get to relive that happiness every yeah. time I do that joke. It's just as much work, in my opinion, mm-hmm. but I get to be happy.
Yeah.
So that would have been amazing. If yeah. Betty Walker, but I don't know that there were any... Like, nobody ever did jokes about how much they love their husbands and wives.
Of course, of course.
Did Phyllis Diller? I remember Fang. No. Have you heard any of the Fang jokes?
Yes, I have.
And they were all pretty grumpy, right?
Yeah. Actually, yeah. There's a project online. I think it's still going through the Smithsonian. Her joke file's being transcribed, and I went through and I transcribed a few of them, and you can correct other people's transcriptions. Like, just this fucking shitload.
A Wikipedia kind of thing?
Basically. But, like, basically, you pull up a scan of a card with one of her jokes on it, you type in the date, type the subject matter, and then, you know, whatever the shitty joke was. And I say shitty just like, you know, they're just dumb. They're great though. Phyllis Diller's fantastic, but like, just a dumb joke that it was.
It's so weird when people keep it like that, you know. Uh-huh. Like Joan Rivers had those filing cabinets.
And
Dat Fan used to talk about his files that he had online. Mm-hmm. And Eliza Schlesinger has some sort of Excel document.
Uh-huh.
And I have stacks and stacks of notebooks.
Sure.
I've kept all my notebooks.
Yeah.
For why? We don't know. I think Mark Maron said it best when he said, I picture when I'm dead, everyone just going, oh my God, let's read all this. And nobody's going to read it. They're
of
just
course.
Gonna,
of
they're
course.
Gonna light it on fire.
Well, yeah, yeah, and, that's exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I remember the first time I ever saw Maria throw Bamford. Friend of mine, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we've been doing stand-up together since 92 93.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time I ever saw her throw a notebook out was probably 7 or 8 years ago, and I was like, wait, what are you doing? She said, I'm done with the notebook, I'm throwing it away. And I was like, oh my, I could keep them and sell them on eBay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she was like, watch this. And she threw it away in front of me. And I was like, okay, your Man. Notebook, you get to do whatever you want.
That is going to be a piece of legend. That is going to be one of those things that people are not going to believe in mm-hmm. 30 years. Because, yeah, it's, yeah, that's,
it's disappointing because you're like,
yeah,
because I want to see the doodles.
Right.
I want to see the weird, like magazine articles. Because she is always counting out magazine articles and
uh-huh.
gluing them into her notebook.
Interesting.
And you're like, what's
yeah.
happening in this notebook? Because yeah. my notebook is all just, it's just writing, just
yeah.
me scribbling.
Yeah.
So.
Wow. Well, at the end of the, comedy is so different now from, let's take you, and then let's take Phyllis Diller. Phyllis Diller needed a stack because I think, I'm assuming it's just like, oh, maybe there's some shit I can refer to. Go pull all the stuff I got about weddings. I got to go do a thing.
Right.
I mean, what
right.
if you...
So
I mean,
she's doing events.
Right.
And she's separated them in these card catalogs by topic.
Right.
Is that what's happening?
They are. They're almost exclusively topic. At least they're by date, and then I assume they're by topic first. But yeah, like it's like huh. celebrities is the topic, and then celebrities. This obscure celebrity whose name I've never fucking heard, and I typed up 10
right.
jokes about this person. So it's so weird to me. But I mean, have you done corporate gigs? And
I've done some corporates, and I'm not particularly good at them.
Uh-huh.
Mostly because I don't like them.
Yeah, I bet.
I mean, it's. The best people who do corporates write to the corporation.
Sure.
They write to the business. They write jokes to that topic.
Mm-hmm.
The boss, the work,
mm-hmm.
the city that they're in,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I do none of that. Okay. I'm like, do you want to see my act?
Okay.
I will come and perform it for you.
Wow.
And then you will pay me. And
yeah,
that
yeah.
is something that is not a corporate.
Sure. Yeah, I'm shocked that anybody would let you do it. I didn't know that it ever went that way. I always assumed it had to be customized to the...
Oh, no. No,
interesting.
No. It's mostly... Yeah, it's mostly just normal. They just want to...
Fascinating. Okay.
And the only thing, like when I do corporates, you know, they'll say... A couple of things about corporates is, first of all... you should always get paid, depending on the amount of credits you have,
mm-hmm.
$1 per person attending.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And if you have credits, $5 per person attending.
Okay.
And if it's 200 people, you should get a lot of money.
Yeah.
And so, like, there was a guy several years ago who ended up doing, like, the L.A. County Sheriff's luncheon that they hired but didn't pay. And then he ended up doing some jokes that had the N-word in them and swearing a lot. And it was a luncheon for cops. And there was a big expose about it. And they were like, look at this horrible thing that happened. Well, it's because they didn't pay him.
Yeah.
If you're paying a comic in lunch, they're going to do their set for themselves.
Of course.
But if you pay me $3,000, my brain's attached to my mouth.
Of course.
I won't. And all you got to do is tell me. Mm-hmm. Don't swear.
Yep.
Try not to do your weird abortion chunk. I don't have a weird abortion chunk, but if I did, you could tell me not to do it
because
you were paying me enough money to tell me what to do and what not to do. Because stand-up comedy is so, I mean, in general, it's super loosey-goosey. You do whatever you want, right? Yeah. You write the jokes that you write and you tell the jokes that you want to tell.
Right.
And when it comes to a corporate or colleges, they, because they supposedly pay better, they get to tell you what you can and cannot do.
Makes sense.
And some clubs are actually like that too, where you'll walk in and they're like, hey, keep it together. And and you're like, fair enough, you've hired me.
This is the
club I want to work. So sure. And yeah, I mean, the weirdest thing, I auditioned for a cruise ship one time and they didn't like my outfit. And I was like, hey, I'm a dressy Bessie. I can take this outfit off. Put on whatever outfit you want.
Right.
Did you want me to work your cruise? They did not, it turns out. Because they didn't get back to me about that. I didn't even say I was a dressy Bessie. I tried to keep it polite. I said, well, obviously I can wear whatever you want me to wear. What do you want me to wear? A ball gown and do stand-up comedy? And that's interesting because she is wearing, I think, a dress in this thing.
Yeah, kind of. It certainly looks. Yeah, it's a fucking paisley, crazy pink paisley number.
Yeah.
That is... that is a polyester nightmare, which is not my phrase. I don't remember where I got it from. But she, yeah, it's a little scary. But she, could something like this, it couldn't work now, right? There's no way.
I think it could.
Do you?
I mean, when you think about some of the comedy that comes out, there's a lot of themed comedy now.
Okay.
Because we have like this, the internet creates these niche groups.
That's,
you know,
true, sure.
And it's so great for dorks, right? It's like, oh, I want to talk to everybody who builds Star Wars Lego, right? Those are the people. There's 100 people in the world, or there's 3,000. And then you all go to Vienna in July. You've saved up, and you meet in a Hampton Inn in Vienna, and you have the time of your lives because you met over the internet. And someone comes from South Korea, three people are from Australia, 9 people are from Indiana, and it's beautiful.
Yeah.
So there are people who want, like, sort of squeaky clean Christian comedy.
Sure. Sure.
Grumpy Christian comedy. I mean, there's different ways of, because there are plenty of comics who are Christians who are not, they don't have mean Jesuses, right?
Sure.
They're just telling jokes.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew a guy who was like, he got asked to do this Christian comedy thing, and he was like, yeah, I'm a Christian, but I don't think I can do your thing because your thing is weird.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't know what kind of Christian you need me to be.
Right. Yeah.
And he's like, I'm just a normal, hey, I hope it all works out for you kind of Christian,
you know?
And I don't care about other people's religion. I just want to do my thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very American, old school American.
Yeah.
And I think that there are probably people, I know that there are, like, what do you think? Maybe the Promise Keepers. Maybe those guys would love a housewife comedian.
Yeah.
Who would just talk about real stereotypical housewifey kind of stuff.
I guess so. Yeah. I get it. I like her attitude a lot.
There's a modern version of this. This is a more positive spin on it. There's a modern version of this that, now granted, I have not seen this woman's, the woman I'm about to say, her long set in probably 7 or 8 years.
Okay.
But Debbie Gutierrez is Latino mommy comedy is essentially what she called it.
Uh-huh.
She says, I pretty much do Latino mommy comedy.
Okay.
And Latino mommy comedy is sort of this.
Okay.
Talking about her kids, talking about her husband, talking about her friends. Debbie Gutierrez just tells the joke. She's not on the phone, which I don't know that the phone thing would ever go.
You see, that's what I'm wondering. That was, I guess that's my, is because it's such a, like a, it would work as a sketch in a thing. You could do that as a sketch.
Yeah, you could totally, maybe a web series.
Yeah, absolutely that. Absolutely.
I want to do a web series of Beyonce's weird white aunt.
Yeah.
Just checking in. Checking in on with Jackie Cation, Beyonce's weird white aunt.
I love and, that. I love that.
I don't know
much.
How to write it, though, because I don't know anything about Beyonce.
Right, right.
Hello. Hello, Sale. Oh, am I glad I got you. Sale, have I got something to tell you? Do you remember that big wedding I went to? You remember? I told you, beautiful wedding, perfect couple. The perfect couple are going to be annulled. Yeah, no, wait a minute. You will not believe this story. Seal, dear, they had a beautiful wedding. There was no fights. The honeymoon, no fights. Even the two mothers agreed where they should go. They came home from the honeymoon. They both went to the little love nest. Wait a minute. They got up in the morning. You hear? He went to work. She went to work. And from work, he went to his mother's house for supper. No, he forgot he was married.
Well, I mean, honestly, like, even Bob Newhart, I saw him live. He did one phone bit as a nod, like a bit of nostalgia for everybody.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
And then he did the rest of his act to the people.
Yeah, mostly street jokes, which is the weirdest thing in the world. Oh, Bob Newhart does street jokes now. I'm not kidding.
I got some quiet time now in my head.
Yep, yep. It's very strange. It's unusual. I don't even know where to go with it. I don't know where to go.
There's nowhere to go with that except for stop doing that. how about... Yeah. It was... I saw Jack Klugman's one-man show.
What? What?
Yeah, which I would recommend... I mean, he's dead now.
Sure.
But, it was amazing.
Yeah.
I would prefer to see Bob Newhart's one-man show.
Uh-huh.
I'd prefer Bob Newhart to just tell stories about how great... his life has been.
Sure.
Or how weird it has been and there how was, bad it has
there
been.
Were bits of that in there for sure. And they were easily my favorite parts.
Right.
Especially when the, I don't know if I'm supposed to say this on microphone, but when, especially when the street jokes got a little more colorful. We'll just say colorful. But when he's talking about his life, great stuff. Turns out Bob Newhart.
Do you mean racist? Or do you
mean
dirty?
Okay, let's say racially insensitive. I won't say racist because it's not like I hate N-words, you know, but it's like street jokes, straight up street jokes, some of which have a racial tinge to them. Yes, I'm giving an old white man a break and I probably shouldn't be. but he's still not Bill Cosby and that's a horrible low standard to have, but he's not Bill Cosby.
I think about Bill Cosby. I've seen Bill Cosby twice.
Have you?
Have you ever seen Bill Cosby?
No, no.
Okay, this was about 6 years ago.
Okay.
It was before the big...
Sure.
And the big reveal on Bill Cosby.
The big reveal.
And so I saw him once. Then a year and a half later, I saw him again.
Okay.
And he had an entirely new hour 15, except one joke.
Okay.
He did a GPS joke both times.
Okay.
And the GPS joke, the first time I saw it, was the first GPS joke I had heard.
Okay.
So it was great. And he's a great comic. He genuinely is.
Of course.
And I think about him. I think about him almost every week. I think about Bill Cosby because he doesn't get to go up anymore.
Sure.
But he's a comic, so you know he's still writing.
Sure.
And I'm
sure.
wondering, what jokes is he writing besides my wife doesn't talk to me?
Uh-huh.
Right?
Right?
And
right.
Whatever. And but you wonder what, because I remember he did very much slice of life. He's still writing kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
Not like what you're saying Bob Newhart is doing.
Sure, sure, sure.
Where he's telling stories about what it's like to be super famous.
Yeah.
Not talking about getting laid or raping people.
Right, right.
But weird, like, going out to dinner with his family.
Sure.
And it's his birthday, and his wife is like, well, bring your wallet. He said, should I bring my wallet? She's like, are we going out to dinner? And he's like, yeah, but it's my birthday. Is nobody buying?
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very funny joke.
Yeah.
But I think about him, and I think about... how great that is, and that's what I want Bob Newhart to do.
Sure.
And also Jay Leno. I saw Jay Leno probably a year ago, maybe less.
Okay.
Maybe more, whatever. He did 15 minutes, and about five or six of it were those monologue jokes.
Okay.
And it was a lot. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, nope, there he is. There's his monologue jokes. Who cares?
Yeah.
And then, but then the other 9 minutes were these fascinating sort of slice of life kind of stuff.
I bet.
About his life.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, please tell me more about that.
Yeah.
And they had punchlines. They were set up, you know.
I always thought he was a funny dude as a stand-up whenever I saw him on TV. I just hated him as a host of The Tonight Show.
Definitively, he was one of the best stand-ups of the 80s.
Yeah, right.
And just, I mean, he had, it was observational, but it was personal.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting. It was smart.
Yeah.
It was silly. It had all the good things going for
it. He's
got
a great fucking personality.
Yeah.
Except for when it comes to business, apparently. You know, like everything else. He's fucking great on stage.
Yeah, so I would love to see more of that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I think that, and she really did, Betty Walker, she was clearly successful because of her personality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because of, she was super likable, mm-hmm. and like you watch her on that game show, and you could tell that all the guys like her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's very much one of the guys.
Yeah, yeah.
And the material isn't bad, the jokes are fine. They're they're just jokes about weird husbandy kind of, and that have been covered.
Yeah, of course.
And are being covered to this day. You know, people are still talking about, you know, bitches, man. What are you going to do? It's, you know, my wife does this, or I don't like my boyfriend, or he's, I hate my wife, I hate my girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And I always, whenever I hear that premise, I'm like, please break up. Please stop hanging out with that person.
Right.
You're actually hurting my feelings. Because there's someone that will love them if you fucking let them go. And if your wife is mean to you, or if your boyfriend is mean to you, oh my God.
Yeah.
I heard some weird joke the other night at a just a showcasey show here in LA.
Mm-hmm.
And it was this woman talking about her fiance.
Mm-hmm.
And she said... she did this stuff about newer stuff about how she was engaged.
Mm-hmm.
And then she did this older, she's what was clearly an older joke about her boyfriend. And she said, well, I suppose I should tell you that that's my fiance. And it was about how he had asked if he could poop on her. And I was like, oh my God, don't marry that guy.
Uh-huh.
That guy has serious control issues and wants to poop on you.
Mm-hmm.
Your fetish, you want to get pooped on, but she didn't want to get pooped on.
Yeah, right.
Like, that's, I mean, if they were both into it.
100%. You got to have the two same Lego pieces to go. Yeah.
Right. You have to be a person that literally wants to be shit upon.
Yep.
With a guy that wants to shit on his girlfriend. And you're like, I hate both of you. And neither of you are invited over for the barbecue. But because you both would make me sad at my house.
Oh, that's so disturbing.
So it's super disturbing. But comedy is so personal now. That's probably me.
Oh.
But comedy's so personal now
mm-hmm.
that where you have to go to make it more interesting,
mm-hmm.
because we can't do these jokes that Betty Walker was doing.
Right.
We have to go down this weird rabbit hole. I mean, Louis C.K. is a perfect example, mm-hmm. right? That guy, talk about unwanted thought syndrome. That guy will address the creepiest thoughts that he has.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no one, I don't know. I kind of love Louis C.K.
Mm-hmm.
and the fact that he's, his stand-up, he has more empathy.
Sure.
Like, he has a way of describing somebody's bad decisions, his own bad decisions, and just sort of revealing in himself these sort of not great parts of his personality.
Sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And how he's kind of working on it.
Mm-hmm.
Or how he's not working on it.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is also very funny. Though a little more disappointing because you'd like him to work on it. Did you see that SNL set the other night?
I did not.
There's too many.
Yeah,
don't worry about it.
Yeah, there's a lot.
So he did this bit about, you know, he previously he has done sort of white privilege kind of jokes, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And now he is not just white privilege, but like the 1% white privilege guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so he's in this situation where he's in, let's say, a Four Seasons or a Ritz, and he's called down because his laundry is supposed to be 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And so he calls down and he's talking to this woman and he talks about how he's clearly a white man and she isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so he should be getting better service. And you're like, that is a disaster of a premise. You are a dick.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, it's a glimpse into who I might really be sometimes. Uh-huh. It isn't okay.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful kind of angle on it.
Absolutely, yeah.
But, and it turns out, of course, that he has forgotten to give them his laundry. and the best part of the joke is actually how he talks about how you can complain at a Ritz-Carlton, but 15 years ago, 20 years ago when he was on the road, mm-hmm. you're not going to complain at a motel, mm-hmm. not even a Super 8, just called motel. Uh-huh. Who are you going to call? Hey, there's cigarette burns in the sheet. And you're like, yeah, mm-hmm. what do you want me to do about
it? You're paying $25 a night. Thanks.
Exactly. What are you gonna, right. And so he would never complain in those situations, yeah. but now because he's in this, expectations are so much higher.
Yeah.
But at the end of the joke, what I didn't like, and he can't possibly care, mm-hmm. but what I would like is sort of not a solution. Mm-hmm. Because in this case, the admission was, yeah, I'm kind of a dick. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, I'm going to want you to work on that. Mm-hmm. And because I have this new bit that doesn't have an end either.
Right.
You know, and the end is the premises that I always thought that I... Sometimes I think to myself, if I die an asshole, mm-hmm. but I was right, that'll be fine.
Yeah. Oh, believe me, Seal, if you could only have... Hold on one second. What did you just say, Warren? What do you mean by that, Warren? What do you mean I'm lucky that I don't want to wear a miniskirt? Hold on, Seal. Mr. Tupperman, don't ever tell me that if I ever wore one, I would walk alone. Hold on. Mr. Tupperman, can I tell you something? And I want you to know this, now and forever. That for as long as I'm married to you, whether I'm pro or anti-miniskirt, I'll never shut up, Sale. I'll never shut up, Sale. I will never, will you shut up and stop crying, Sale? I will never walk alone. Myself, I just woke up my bird.
And nobody, why is that okay?
There's, right.
I mean, there's nothing worse, quite honestly, for me mm-hmm. than when I'm right.
Yeah.
That self-righteousness mm-hmm. manifests itself in the grumpiest, just a raging jackass. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be around me. And if I'm right, Jesus. I was at the grocery store, and I've told this, I don't know, I did it on my own podcast, The Dork Forest, but I was at the grocery store a month ago. We're living in different times. Mm-hmm. I'm walking out of the grocery store. There's an old man, 80. I push an old man in this story. Mm-hmm. It isn't okay. 80-year-old dude, not crazy, not homeless, khakis, belt, polo shirt, loaf of French bread. He's walking in front of me out of this thing, 80-year-old mm-hmm. white guy. Mm-hmm. And he starts yelling at the rent-a-cop, and he says the N-word, and he calls him a Haitian, and he tells him he screws monkeys,
oh,
and that's why there's
wow.
AIDS. Uh-huh. And it goes on like that for 40, 50 seconds. And 10 years ago, I probably would have just looked at the rent-a-cop and gone, the hell's the matter with that guy?
Yeah, yeah.
And I might have yelled something at the guy, mm-hmm. but that would have been it.
Yep.
But those days are done, and Jackie Cation wants to be a white lady meat shield. Or I can't stop myself, uh-huh, right?
Yeah.
Except for that I have to stop myself because mm-hmm. I want to be of some use.
Sure.
And me getting in the face of an 80-year-old man isn't necessarily the best use of my life. So I get in his face and I'm yelling at him. And the only good thing I yelled at him, and I was like, is there anything you wanted to say about women to a middle-aged white lady? And he was like, what are you talking about? I said, you can't talk to him like that. It isn't okay. And you can't say those things because they're horrible. And you're an idiot. Mm-hmm. And I'm just yelling and I'm swearing and I'm doing all these things. Mm-hmm. And finally, 80-year-old white guy says to me, this has nothing to do with you. This is none of your business. And I said, it has everything to do with me because this is America and you're horrible. Mm-hmm. And it isn't okay. And he says, America, pa. And I turn into a country music song, and I push an 80-year-old man. I don't push him down, but I push him. Uh-huh. And I push him into some carts. Uh-huh. Anyway, he doesn't fall. It isn't okay. None of it's okay.
No, it's not.
And I'll tell you what the hero doesn't do. The hero doesn't go sit in her car and cry. That's not what Captain America does after he's fought the Nazis. He doesn't take 3 days to tell his husband that he was jackass. At which point my husband was like, you know who carries guns? 80-year-old white guys.
That is a good point.
So how about you keep it together uh-huh. and you don't hurt the elderly.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. He said, you can yell at the guy. You can say things.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no, yeah. Keep it together. As, I want to be of some use, but that isn't. Anyway, so that story mm-hmm. is essentially, I don't want to die an asshole.
Uh-huh.
And me pushing an 80-year-old man is me being an asshole.
Sure.
And so I realized in that moment that even if I'm right, I still die an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to.
Right and alive are both super, super helpful.
Right. Uh-huh. And not as bad yeah. as the person yeah. that I'm fighting.
Exactly.
I don't want to turn into that guy.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's the fear we all have, I think.
Right. And yeah.
I don't know if I should be laughing at it or not, but it is
Please.
Really funny.
That's,
it is
no, no, really it's, funny. Hopefully there's a bit there.
Because I wasn't there. That's right. Why it's fun. That's why all comedy works.
Oh, my God. Yeah, yeah. The way it remove distance.
Could, now, I don't know. I'm just, the more I think about Betty Walker, I'm again, I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It is, but it is one note. And it's so hard. Again, I don't know how she suspends 40 minutes. Maybe she doesn't. Maybe it's not 40 minutes of worth it. But I don't know what else she ever did. But it also seems like that is the perfect kind of person to... I mean, she did on the phone what... You, again, Phyllis Diller was a good example. I mean, that was all housewife stuff. I mean, that was all yeah. like what it was like. I actually like... There's some people who... I like Joan Rivers, who... It's actually really hard to talk about what Joan... How she evolved as a comic, because she released 2 albums in her whole lifetime because she didn't need to bother, you know? So it's hard to say. Like, she goes from, like, this album, and then 17 years later, like, super fucking famous Joan Rivers, yeah. rich off her ass. Still really funny.
Right.
Really funny.
But an entirely different kind of comic.
Exactly. But
I mean,
then,
that's,
yeah.
That's the beauty of this... Of a career where you put out an album,
mm-hmm.
you know? And like, if you listen, that's why it's, I mean, Doug Stanhope puts out an album like every year, or
yeah,
every year
yeah.
and a half.
Right.
It's, but if you listen to my albums, and by God, you ought to.
Absolutely.
You get the evolution. And plus, to some extent, especially with my albums, because they tend to be more about my dad, my parents, and my siblings, and my life.
Mm-hmm.
So you get the story of my life. And so, like, if you go, the first album I did it, and it is, if you find it, oh my God, rip it quick, because it'll disintegrate around you.
Because
it was one of those ones where I burned it on my computer.
Oh, shit, yeah.
Yeah. It's called Cake Is Not My Downfall, and mm-hmm. a lot of the material that's on that album is on Bread.
Okay.
But Circus People is the first sort of professional album I ever did.
Mm-hmm.
And that's on CD Baby, and it's on my website, of course. Mm-hmm. But it's available. You can listen to it for free on all the things.
Okay.
But if you listen, I don't like that album very much.
Okay.
Because it's sort of no longer in sequence, because Cake Is Not My Downfall is out of print and will never be in print. and the best of that material is on Bread.
Okay.
It's sort of out of order. So you should get Bread and then listen to Circus People,
mm-hmm.
and there'll be some overlap of the jokes, quite honestly,
mm-hmm.
and that's fine. And the one guy who emailed me and said, "Why are there the same jokes on 2 albums?" You can fuck off, quite honestly.
There are, believe me, one of my favorite comedians is Rusty Warren, who, mostly because I think she's fantastic and adorable, she signed that for me, lucky me.
Oh,
the woman released about 15 albums, and she overlaps on every album.
Oh, every album.
Every album. I mean, because she was a club comic. And yeah. she was a club comic who had a bit she did. She had songs she did every time. Songs she mixed up. The intro to the songs was the same. But she was charming as fuck, so it's okay.
Right. And it. When did she work?
Okay.
Rusty Warren.
Her last album, I could be full of shit, 76 or 78. Late 70s, but she's early 60s to late 70s.
Okay.
And she had a Vegas stretch in there, too. Like she, yeah. But she could never get on Carson because she was dirty.
Oh.
Even though, listen to Joan Rivers. Well, I don't think she was that dirty. She
I'm sorry, listen to George Carlin.
Exactly right. Believe
yeah,
me. Believe me.
Yeah.
I'm just...
You get it.
With just the reason is because Johnny Carson, lovely as he might have been, was a giant sexist and a homophobe. I mean, it's,
right.
it's we're
People
allowed to
worried.
Say that, right?
People,
I think I'm allowed to say that.
Yeah, I don't think you're breaking any ground.
Right.
Saying that... and if you think that Johnny Carson wasn't a bit of a sexist, mm-hmm. watch any of the sketches.
Watch any of them, absolutely.
any of the sketches with the booby ladies and him tripping and accidentally groping one of them, you big weirdo Magoo. And it's gross.
Yucky.
But, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there we go. There's that. But yeah, I mean, but again, like, again, who gives
but
a shit?
But there's overlap.
There's overlap. That's
so,
fine.
But if you listen, like, Bread was my first, I think. I mean, Circus People has some good fun stuff on it. Mm-hmm. It's fine. but Bread and then Horcrux and then this new one, Hero, is those three. I'm super proud of all of them, and I am a different comic on each of them.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's fascinating. If I listen to more comedy, I bet you'd find that with other comics, you guys. You should totally do that with Patton Oswalt.
Absolutely. You should, actually. And I can tell why later, but yeah, you should.
It would be neat to just to follow somebody's career. Like, if you listen to, like, Maria Bamford.
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about her again.
Yeah.
Just because, like, I help her with her merch. I was just helping her. And she had three albums we were selling in Phoenix last weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe she has a total of 5 albums out.
Okay.
And talk about, like, the Burning Bridges tour, I think, is the first album.
Mm-hmm.
How to Win is second album.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Unwanted Thought Syndrome is third, but and then 20% just came out.
Yeah.
And there might be another one in there. But if you were to listen to each of those albums, you would see... You would actually get the arc of a person kind of healing themselves using comedy.
Absolutely.
Which is a neat thing to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. It's why when I hear that, like, Aaron Jackson or Wendy Liebman any number of comics that I know don't have albums. And you're like, well, Wendy Liebman not having an album is a crime against humanity.
Mm-hmm.
I think she has a DVD out, and that's it. And I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Because she could be on television doing 5 minutes and never repeat herself every night for a year.
Right. Okay.
Because she's a damn genius. And those jokes are perfect for 5 minutes.
Yes.
And so I don't know why she's not on all of the... It'd be great if she did a different... How great would, like, a 4-day week where she did, like, Monday on Fallon, Tuesday on Colbert, Wednesday on Conan, Thursday... It would just be... It'd be fun for me.
I would love... Yeah, I mean, it really drives me crazy when people don't have albums, obviously, but...
Yeah, because you have a podcast.
Exactly. But I don't know if I've ever heard, other than going to see Maria record her last album, the one she did at UCB, which... Is that the 20%? Is that 20%? No.
No. Maybe. Maybe.
Okay,
yeah.
So I saw that, and that was amazing. But I don't know her. I just went because I'm a huge fan, right?
Yeah.
But I haven't heard her other albums. All I knew of her growing up was seeing her on TV. Oh, that's the voice lady. That's all I knew.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and then eventually she gets personal, and fuck, I wish I'd have listened to her other albums.
Well, an attainable goal. Holy smokes. Talk about, like, on my Pandora station.
Mm-hmm.
You know how you can make a Pandora station?
Mm-hmm.
And so I made mine. And so my albums are on there, but it's just, it'll go to, like, Rachel Feinstein or Jen Kirkman or Maria Bamford or any, you know, Gruntowski or anybody's. And it's always, you know, if you've been doing stand-up, like, as long as I've been doing stand-up, like, my first album, that Cake album, probably, I think I printed it in 98.
Okay.
But Circus People came out, I think, in 2000 or 2001.
Mm-hmm.
And then Bread was in 2003 or 4.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not right. Who cares? Well, but they're like, literally, I've done 4 albums in the last 10 years or 12. And it's for the, and I've been doing stand-up comedy for about 27, 28 years.
Yeah.
Those first 15 years, I'm not sad that I don't have those albums because that stand-up is going to be very different.
Sure.
I mean, Circus People is brutal enough for me. So, but I know comics, like, I always encourage, like, the features because I do the road of Fairmont. Well, that's what I do, right?
Yeah.
And so if I headline the road, the opener, there's no money in featuring and doing the middle spot on the road.
Uh-huh.
So as soon as you have 30 or 40 minutes, get an album out.
Right. Yeah.
And it'll be fascinating and irritating to you 20 years from now if you keep doing it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, especially if you could, like, I like to come out with an album every 2.5 to 3 years.
Yeah.
Because I want the jokes to be done.
Sure.
And that's why the first 10, 12 minutes of Hero is so fascinating to me to some extent, because some of those jokes are, I've only done them a half a dozen times.
Really? Oh, shit.
A handful of times.
Doesn't feel that way.
Well, that's good, because, but they have, a couple of them have better punchlines now.
Okay, all right.
But they're so, but I'll tell you what, a couple of them have better punchlines, but a couple of them aren't as good as they were those first six times, because I wasn't as emotional about it.
All right, okay.
And sometimes that emotion will add another layer to the stand-up.
Scorpio rising. Don't say that, Sil. It's very logical. Listen to me. She explained it to me. She said, look, a Scorpio rising is a fixed water sign. I am a pure Leo. No, that means that I am complete fire. Complete. Now, she says, Mrs. Tuperman, what happens when you mix fire and water? When you mix fire and water, you get steam. And steam is the story of my marriage. Yeah. Now, she gave me a little hope. No, she said to me that, she said, your husband can be a wonderful man. She said, he's wonderful when Jupiter hits his natal house. This happens once in 12 years. And I missed it both times.
Oh, I agree. I mean, there's a bit on there that isn't even a joke that kind of made me tear up a little bit.
Oh, the genocide thing?
What the fuck was the line? It was like, how exactly did you put it? Nobody gets on the trains? Is that, how'd you say it?
Yeah, nobody gets on the trains.
I was like, oh, fuck, that got real. And it was great. It was perfect. Oh, it was good. A perfect moment for it.
Yeah.
That's how that should work. But I also like the idea of every 2.5-3 years you're doing it, rather than every year, because you can't hear the evolution from one album to another. You have to hear a gap.
Yeah.
For me, anyway. Like, it's like, if it's every year, cool. If that's good for you and your people are going to buy it, fucking great. You're going to make the money.
Right.
But for me,
yeah,
I'd rather hear...
Well, that's why, I like, as much as I truly enjoy Louis C.K., I like watching him.
Mm-hmm.
But it's... When he was putting out an album or a new special every year, I remember watching him... Because I also don't listen to albums or watch specials.
Sure.
But I'd see the set, or I'd see something. I'd see him perform, and I'd think... Oh my God, how great will that joke be in another 6 months?
Yeah.
Because if he came out every 18 months instead of every year.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard actually that he said he's done with the every year thing because
okay.
he doesn't, his plate is too full and he can't finish the jokes in time.
Sure.
And so, yeah, let them marinate, man.
Mm-hmm.
Just think about how great they'll be if they marinate.
Yeah.
And because you'll come up with another punchline or two. I did the political stuff because I thought we'd all be dead. And for some reason, I thought, well, let the aliens find it.
Yeah, right.
And, you know.
Well, and that, I mean, the crazy thing is, like, when I hear, I mean, you actually call yourself out on it at the beginning of the album. Wait, let's say the name of the album before we keep talking about it.
I Am Not the Hero of the Story.
Thank you.
I Am Not the Hero of the Story is my new album. It came out at the beginning of March 2017.
Mm-hmm.
And it did things that none of my other albums did, which was, it was number one on Amazon and iTunes for sales. And then number three on Billboard, number three on Billboard without a bullet, you guys. It opened at three, then that was it. Okay, but it had never made Billboard, so I'm excited.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Now, all that's left is for, at the end of the year, it to be critically acclaimed and on those lists.
Of course.
Because those are the lists I also enjoy.
Of course.
I'm a list person.
But that,
I'm alive.
But that's it. Like, you call yourself out for, like, you know, not normally being political, but feeling it as a necessity. You don't often, like... I find myself having to listen back. Again, I'm trying to listen to a comedy album every day this year.
Oh, wow.
It's a pain in the ass. I'm 20 albums behind already because it's so hard to do with all my other shit.
Yeah.
But when you listen to stuff, I think it was when I was interviewing Tommy Chong the other day. I was like, hey, I know I'm going to overexamine this because I have my head up my ass. Like, I admitted it. I'm like, because it's just how it goes. Like, so you find yourself picking apart, like, maybe they meant this. Like, you get super way too intellectual about it. Sometimes it really, really helps when somebody does that and says, I don't normally get political. Now I'm getting political. Enjoy or don't. Like, it is actually kind of helpful to have that as an earmark, you know?
Well, it's funny because I did that. I recorded them at Acme in Minneapolis,
mm-hmm.
where I've done all of my albums. Mm-hmm. It's my home club.
Yeah.
And that audience is trained. And stand-up comedy audiences, live stand-up comedy audiences, are more tolerant than... Any just normal people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you go to a very conservative state, like I'm going to Birmingham next month,
mm-hmm.
and Alabama, and but I'm performing for stand-up comedy audiences.
Sure.
Who will sit there and go, well, I don't agree with your politics, but that was a funny joke.
Yeah.
And that's what they'll do. They'll sit there and do that. I was in Peoria, and I started in, I have new political jokes.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm having a hard time writing anything but, mm-hmm. because it's on my brain. And I don't want to. Some woman came up to me the other, I was in Phoenix in this, or Tucson, this woman comes up and she goes, you know, this is the third time I've seen you, and I think the political stuff is your forte. I think that's going to be your thing. And I said, I don't want it to be my thing.
I get that.
Because I'm angry.
Uh-huh.
And I don't want to be angry.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'd like to be is happy.
Of course.
And then write those down. I think that's been established. Anyway, so, but I was in Peoria, and I started in on this political chunk, and I don't say President Psycho's name in any of my material.
I appreciate that as well.
And yeah, I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
I'm not a reality TV person,
mm-hmm.
either. So, but I start talking about the president, the current administration, and mm-hmm. I just start getting this glare from this dude in the second row. And I go, you know, you can hate me all you want, man, but I'm getting walked to my car, so fuck off. You
yeah.
know? I'm like, it yeah. doesn't, I'm going to talk about this. If you don't like it, you can bail.
Mm-hmm.
It's hardly, I don't know what else you want me to, I mean, I'd love to talk about dogs.
Of course. You know? Of course.
If I could write a puppy bit, we'd all win.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, Carlin got started, don't get me wrong, I love early George Carlin way more than I like later Carlin. Much as I appreciate the art of what he did as an angry man on stage, even though, like, if you saw him off stage, he was less angry seeming. I think a lot of people like him got started on those. I'm not saying you're going to become a political comedian, especially if you don't want to be. Right. But, like, reticence is always
right,
a huge part of it.
I don't want to be.
Reticence is a part of it. If you're, like, willingly angry about everything, that's either boring or somehow really fascinating if it's Lewis Black. But, like, you know, or I guess to some people, Kinison.
It's a tiny part of the spectrum.
Yeah.
And if you can rock it, rock it.
Sure.
But
otherwise,
I don't even want to.
Exactly.
I did Kelly Carlin's show on XM.
Uh-huh.
And, I admitted that I had not heard any of her dad. And she was like, oh, thank God. Finally, the person who doesn't know who the hell he is. And she's like, I loved him, but Jesus, I can't take the canonization.
Yeah.
Or
oh,
whatever,
I bet.
Right?
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was interesting because I had done two XM series, one with Jay Thomas,
mm-hmm.
who played a right-wing blowhard on Murphy Brown.
Oh, fuck.
And then Rhea Butcher's right-wing blowhard husband on Cheers.
Uh-huh.
And it turns out that was typecasting.
Because
he's got a radio show on XM Sirius. And the first thing the thing about shock jock radio dudes is there's only one way is to shock them into shutting up.
Of course, of course.
But at the end of it, do you feel like you won? No.
Right.
But because I don't want to play.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's very war games.
Yeah.
Would you like to play some chess? Because I don't want to. It was his first question. He says, you one of these fucking feminists?
Oh,
and I said, yes, yes, and a cunt. So if you want to play, shut it. And then at the end of the interview, he goes, hey, you were pretty great. Let's have you on again. And I was like, yeah, we'll talk about it.
Oh, God damn it.
Like, I want to be, I don't necessarily need his fan base to care about me.
Are you one of the, oh, my good God.
Yes, I'm alive.
Ooh, yeah.
So I'm going to be in favor. I know that you don't think that women should have control of their own bodies
because
it's on the platform.
Yeah.
But
mm-hmm.
I'm going to be against that.
Yeah.
Because I don't tell you what hand to jerk off with, right? I'm like, you're a lefty, you knock yourself out. You're righty, it's you between you and your God. It's, but you want to tell me what to do with my body? I don't want to talk to you. I don't know why I'm having this Joe Pesci moment.
I don't know, but
go.
I like it. I like it very much. Well, if they do the Home Alone reboot, I hope they hire you. I hope they hire you as the Pesci character because that would be fantastic.
I want to call it Hard Target. And it would be me and like mm-hmm. Wanda Sykes.
Mm-hmm.
And we both work at a Target.
Mm-hmm.
And then either bank robbers or terrorists break into the Target right at closing time.
Okay.
And so we are trapped somewhere in the toy department and we use toys and found objects in Target to stop the bad guys in a Home Alone-like moment.
I love this idea very much.
It's a a buddy movie, and then she could be like in love with the pharmacist.
Okay.
Or I could. Or two actors that are neither of us, and I would like to sell this idea.
I love this idea, and I'm stealing it. No, but I love this idea
very much. Let's put Ricky and Kate Minucci or whatever.
Oh, sure.
Garfunkel and Oates.
Yeah.
Buddy movie.
Mm-hmm.
Done.
That's a good idea. Two more skinny white girls on camera. That's a very good idea. Let's do this.
in their 20s, early 30s. Sure. Let's do it.
Yeah. Okay, so let's do this because...
Yeah, are we at an hour?
We're just about at an
hour.
I'm
a little sniffly. I'm sorry.
How dare you? How dare you be sniffly? Right. Okay, so let's talk about Betty Walker's album because the only reason we didn't have a ton to say about it is because it might not... It was funny, but it's like, it's funny. There's not as much to say about it because it doesn't age well in some ways.
It wasn't soul-changing at all.
Exactly right.
It was I was glad that I picked it, though.
Sure, me too, 100%.
Because I never heard of her.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, I wonder what she was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it was great, and it was interesting. And she was interesting through the whole thing.
Yeah.
And look at those eyes, man. She looks like she's smarter than the average bear right
now. Yeah, absolutely.
She looked like super smart and really funny. And I think if she were alive today, like if she were doing stand-up now, that it would be much more updated and much more... She would roll with it.
I think. And I actually think it might have been
fit right in.
It would have been fun to watch her do it. Maybe that might have been more of what people were laughing at too. I want to know. I don't know.
Oh right, because it's best with comedy the way it goes for me. I like to see it live. Then I like to listen to it on audio.
Okay,
that's the next step.
All right,
and then video.
Okay,
because video there's that separation of screen. Least favorite way to watch stand-up comedy when it is part of a plot of a TV show.
Sure.
Or a movie, a la your punchlines or your Julie Kushner, Julie whatever polka dot movie about a stand-up comic.
Okay.
Anyway, her hook was that she wore polka dots.
Oh, okay. I see. That's
just good writing.
Absolutely.
But there's a new TV show that I admit to being interested in. It's with Al Madrigal on Showtime called I'm Dying Up Here.
Oh, is it the one about the backstage of Carson shit?
It's like, I think so.
Yeah,
70s,
yeah, yeah.
Early 70s. And he's supposed to play like a Freddie Prinze-like character.
Interesting.
Like Chico the Man Guy.
Okay.
And so that could, I mean, the weird thing is the stand-up. You can't, no one's willing to give away their A material.
No, of course.
So there's no way to portray stand-up comedy as funny as it is.
Yeah.
When it's like... on an episode of Bones and someone has been killed.
Oh, no.
And then you got to watch a stand-up comic. He's like, he's got reason to kill.
And the worst part is they hire a fucking stand-up comic to do it. And then you've got to look like you don't know how to be a stand-up.
Right. Oof. But you don't say no because everyone needs $1,000.
Of course not. Yeah.
Right.
Why would you not? Okay. I don't know when this is going to come out. So I apologize for that. If you have a specific time, you let me know. Otherwise... let's go over where they can find you, what they should purchase.
Well, all right. My name is Jackie Cation.
Yes,
it's Kashian. Mm-hmm. And if you go to JackieCation.com, all the things will be revealed. I have two podcasts. I have a podcast called The Dork Forest, which you have been on.
Yes.
Talking about, we should have just stuck with Legos.
Maybe.
Because then we had Matthew on.
Yes.
And,
right.
And he went more in detail.
Oh, because he can.
Because he can, and, yeah. and he will. Requested or not, vice presidents are on the brain with that guy.
Yes.
And Legos are on the brain with you.
Yes.
And so the Dork Forest, I interview people about what they love a lot. That's what they dork out about. Like this week it's musicals with Rebecca Sugar, created a cartoon called Steven Universe.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Anyway, so it could be anything. That's the Dork Forest. I also have another podcast just about stand-up comedy, so people who listen to this... I do a podcast with Lori Kilmartin on the Nerdist channel called The Jackie and Lori Show, where Lori and I literally real-time bitch about stand-up comedy.
It's great.
So good times for there if you like that. Mm-hmm. And we're exhausted because we work really hard all the time, and the scheduling of getting us on both in front of a microphone is the hardest part. So it's usually midnight, and we're exhausted, so we hit an hour, and we're like... goodbye.
Yeah.
And so we talk, and then Kyle tells us it's an hour, and we're like, and run, so that you can get as much sleep as possible,
because
my flight's at 5 o'clock in the morning. So that's super fun. And then I have I Am Not the Hero of the Story is my album. At Jackie Cation on all the things. Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter, Dork Forest, The Dork Forest on Facebook. But the... I'm on the road all the time, doing wherever town you people live. Mm-hmm. The most exciting places I'm doing stand-up is at the end of July. I'm doing it in Dublin, Ireland.
Whoa.
And then Iceland, Reykjavik.
Awesome.
So figure out how to get to see those things.
Mm-hmm.
And then other than that, I'll be in Bloomington, you guys. Anything? Indiana? Okay, so that, I mean, if it comes out in the next month or so. But yeah. Otherwise, just go to JackieCation.com and go to my schedule and look.
That's awesome.
And I open for Maria Bamford and I open for Brian Regan. So
shit.
Those are two very different comics.
Two very different comics, but like, that's impressive.
It's well, I am very versatile.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also headline my own Beeswax. So come and see me do stand-up if you want. And if not, no harm, no foul.
That's so good.
It's all good.
Do you have to tailor your comedy for Brian Regan just because he's clean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And for Maria.
Yeah.
Because the thing is like, if I'm just doing my... the greatest thing about working with Maria is Maria wants me to go as weird. And she's the one who's constantly saying, do the genocide bit. And I'm like, the genocide bit is emotionally draining.
Oh, of course it is.
So to do it... is I have to gird my loins, essentially, yeah. And then bring up the Armenian genocide.
Right. You know how good that stuff was, though? I almost went and told you, yeah. Oh, you know what? I recently heard about that, and I was about to do your bit back to you. That's how much it stuck in my head.
Oh, my God.
Like, yeah, it's so much fun. Everybody, yes, listen to her album. Follow her. Listen to all her damn podcasts. All, too. It's not a full play. It's easy to listen to every week. And throughout this year, I'm doing comedy album a day. So go to youtube.com/comedyonvinyl. You'll see my reviews. I'm way behind. By when time this comes out, I should be caught up. Plus some, my next movie's coming out sometime. Jackie's in it. She plays herself.
Oh my God, that was so fun.
That was a ton of fun. I have to figure out how I'm going to integrate all those blogs and still make the movie look good. Like, it's going to be weird. But you helped me out so much by doing that. It was a ton of fun. And that's about it. So thank you guys for listening. And as always, have a good thing. Comedy on Vinyl is a production of Stolen Dress Entertainment. It is produced by Mike Warden and is hosted and edited by Jason Klom. Our theme song was composed and performed by Richard Levinson. Please visit stolendress.com to listen to our other podcasts, read our blogs, read our tweets, watch our videos, and read our books. Please subscribe on iTunes, and if you like us, give us a 5-star rating and a nice review. You can find us on facebook.com/comedyonvinyl, Twitter @comedyonvinyl, and find everything else at comedyonvinyl.com. A major portion of Comedy on Vinyl has been underwritten by Stand Up Records. Please visit standuprecords.com for all your comedy needs and tune into the new Stand Up channel available on the Roku, where you can also find select episodes of this podcast.